Today I'm going to talk about some of the research that's coming out of Flytree. But first I'd like to introduce Flytree, talk a little bit about an overview of the immature Diptera, a little bit about the history of using immature data in phylogenetic reconstruction, and also, lastly, the new results from Flytree data sets. Now, Flytree is a multi-authored collaborative project from around the world, and I'm just one of the spokespeople for it. So there are many people that we need to acknowledge for this work. And the goal of this project is to collect the largest data set of morphological molecular characters for the phylogenetic inference of Diptera. And the overall strategy is a three-tier system in which the first tier we sample a high number of nuclear genes and mitochondrial genomes, totaling about 30,000 base pairs, almost 400 morphological gene characters from 45 exemplar taxa across Diptera. Tier two is a reduced molecular data set for 210 taxa across all Dipteran families. And tier three is going to be a super tree analysis of all the tree topologies historically and the modern ones. Okay, so a little introduction to immature Diptera. Immature Diptera, or larval Diptera, are hugely ecologically diverse. They are found almost anywhere and feeding on almost anything, and they can in fact survive in some harsh conditions that other insects can't survive in, such as hot springs, hypersaline water, crude oil tar pits, and even in Antarctica. So, Diptera are very ecologically diverse. They also happen to be very morphologically diverse, and this probably goes hand in hand with their ecological diversity. And I'd argue that they are probably the most morphologically diverse of all the insect orders as immatures. The variation is actually so great that the only character that unites all larval Diptera is an absence of true thoracic legs, which has actually been independently developed in other orders too. So there are very few, almost none, no synapomorphies for larval Diptera. So just to show you a little bit of this, of a smattering of these morphologies, here's just a slide showing the lower Diptera, or what we call Nematocera traditionally. And it shows that there are very many body life forms. They have various prolegs, anal papillae and processes. They sometimes have independently evolved reduction in head capsules, such as tapulids, which have a hemicephalic head capsule, and even a completely membranous head in the Cantharocelidae. There's a great variety of forms in the lower Diptera. In the lower Brachycera, there's still a good variety, but they're more homogeneous. Most of these larvae are predators in soils and in water. Some are hypermetamorphic and vary greatly between instars. These include acrocerids, which are parasites of spiders, nemestrinids, and bombyliids. These all have hypermetamorphic larvae. And they do all the, in the lower Brachycera, there are various productions of prolegs in aquatic forms, and other adaptations to their lifestyles. When we get into the Cyclorapha, there is still some diversity in forms. However, most Cyclorapha have the typical maggot form that most people think of when they think of fly larvae. However, there are, again, prolegs developed, various spiracular forms and processes among families. In addition to the high morphological variation within the major groups of Diptera, there also happens to be some high morphological variation within families. Here shown cycodids, ceratopogonids, and serfids, just to show a few examples of where the larvae can vary greatly within one family. This also holds true with variation between the instars, and first instars versus second, third, and fourth in the case of the Nematocera can vary greatly sometimes as well. So there's a high amount of variation in larval Diptera, and this may seem daunting to morphologists and systematists, but there are some evolutionary trends that are present. So the first evolutionary trend within immature Diptera is the reduction in the larval head capsule. Here's a diagrammatic drawing from the evolution of the insects showing the desclerotization of the larval head capsule going as you go up the evolutionary tree in the Diptera. So the lower Diptera have this eucephalic, well-defined head capsule, very highly sclerotized, at least in most taxa. When you go and get into the lower Bachycera, the posterior margin of the head becomes desclerotized and these rods start to push into the thorax. And then when you get into the Cycloraepha, into the maggots, the head is almost completely desclerotized into only a cephalopharyngeal skeleton and mandibles. And this is the typical maggot head, if you could call it that. Another evolutionary trend, a traditional evolutionary trend within the Diptera, is the orientation of the mandibles in the larvae. It's traditionally been thought that basal or more primitive Diptera have these mouth parts that move on a horizontal plane, like most other holometabolous larvae, where they strike each other and move in a biting type fashion. And then as the articulation points start to move, where the hypochondylus moves out and the epicondyle moves toward, the mandibles start to move in an oblique plane until in the Cycloraepha, where they have these just the mandibles, they move almost in parallel to each other. I would note that this is a traditional hypothesis, and as you'll see later on, this may not in fact be the true transformation series of the larval mandibles. And lastly, since this is an immatures and pupil are considered immatures, PPR, pupil morphology has undergone specialization in the Diptera, in that the pupae of lower Diptera and the lower Bachycera are obtect, and one of the major synapomorphies of the Cycloraepha is this coarctate puparium, in which the exudate pupa develops inside the last larval skin. So there have been a number of evolutionary trends within immature Diptera that are very indicative of their phylogeny. So, a history of using larval characters for the phylogenetic inference of Diptera. There's a rich history of using larval characters to resolve the phylogenetics of Diptera, and this is just a sampling of the many, many studies that have been done using larval characters. Just to highlight a few, Edwards was one of the early proponents of using characters from all life stages, and he actually outlined several character systems that were and still are potentially useful for uniting several lineages of Diptera. Hennig, of course, father of modern cladistics, was a dipterist as well, and although his major phylogenies were based mostly on adult characters, he did incorporate many larval characters in his phylogeny. The authors of the third volume of the Manual of New York Diptera, the one dealing with the phylogenetics of Diptera, used many larval characters, and especially Wooden Borkan in their treatise on the lower Diptera almost exclusively used larval and pupil characters to further our knowledge of the relationships between these groups. Courtney did a lot of work on the Blepharis seromorpha and especially the larvae, and furthered and added to Wooden Borkan's treatment of the lower Diptera, and established some new synapomorphies uniting some of his groups with some of the other groups. The most detailed, up-to-date phylogeny of the tapulids by Osterbrook and Theowald is actually based entirely on pupil and larval characters, which is kind of interesting because most most major phylogenies are based on adult characters, whereas in the tapula, the most well-sampled one is actually based on immature stages. In 1992, Sinclair homologized and described the mandibles of various lower Diptera and Brachycera, and this was an important step to figuring out the relationships from where the Brachycera came from in the lower Diptera and the relationships between lower Brachycera and other Brachycera taxa. And lastly, this fly, Exorita nevra, was pushed around to different families throughout history and was unsure which family it actually belonged to. But once Palmer and Yates described the larva in 2000, it was very easily placed in the Xylophagidae because the larval characters were so characteristic of that family. So larvae have been important in the phylogenetics of Diptera for a long time. So now I'm going to present some of the results of Flytree and the impact on the understanding of immature Diptera. These results are mostly going to be from a paper that I authored with Brian Wiegman and Greg Courtney that just came out in Systematic Entomology. And this is a molecular phylogeny of the lower Diptera. We sampled all traditional fly families of the lower Diptera, including some outgroups and some Brachycera for to see the placement of the Brachycera within the lower Diptera or within the Diptera. And we sampled four nuclear genes, totaling a little over 5,000 base pairs. And our results were very nice, I have to say. In that, this is the Bayesian analysis, and what we have are some traditional families, traditional groupings, especially the Culicomorpha, which had almost all the traditional groupings found by morphology, were reiterated by the molecular data, a traditional Tapulomorpha, and a traditional Bibianomorpha. However, there were a number of novel placements of families, including the Psychotomorpha only containing a couple, three families, and a sister group between the Deuterophlebiidae and all the rest of the Diptera. So what can we infer from this molecular phylogeny? So there are a number of cases in which the larval morphology disagrees with the molecular results. So first off, this is just a reduced version of that phylogeny with just the families on there. The first and most surprising result was the resolution of the Deuterophlebiidae as sister to the rest of the Diptera. The Deuterophlebiids are called mountain midges and have long been allied with the Blepharoceridae, the net-winged midges. Now, looking at the immatures and certain adult characters, the evidence is very hard to ignore. Both groups have these prolegs on most segments. They have a little bit of fusion of the thorax and the head. The pupae are almost identical looking with pads, these adhesive pads that they use to stick on the rocks, and this very hydriform pupa top. And both these taxa are found in fast-moving streams, fast-moving cool streams attached to rocks. Even adult characters such as these fine crenation in the wings occurs because in only these two families are the wings expanded while still in the pupa. And this is probably an adaptation to getting out of the water very quickly when they, instead of getting flushed away. Now, although these are very convincing synapomorphies, morphological synapomorphies, from our results, at least so far, this appears to be an extreme case of convergence for this lifestyle. There are a number of groups that have prolegs and suckers that are used to attach to rocks. And we feel that these, because they come out so far away from each other, are probably extreme homoplasy in the ecology of these groups. So that's one of the first cases where the molecular data overturns some of the morphological data, especially from immatures. One of the most radical groupings in the last couple decades was done by Wood and Borkent, and this was to unite a number of families that differ greatly in adult morphology, but have a number of synapomorphies dealing with the mouth parts of the larvae. Here are the families that they united, and if you know anything about them, the adults are definitely very different from each other. But the larvae have all these characters that are very convincing as to the relationships between them. However, if we were to plot where these families are in the molecular phylogeny, they come out across, very polyphyletic, across the Diptera. And in fact, if you were to look at where these characters, all these characters are distributed from and what Wood and Borkent considered convergences in these characters, almost all of Diptera, almost all of the lower Diptera, except for the higher Bibionomorpha and the Tanaidaridae, have some of these, have one or a couple of these characters. This leads us to believe that these characters are probably a ground plan for the whole of Diptera. A divided mandible, a mandible's moving in a kind of oblique fashion. And this is why I said that trend from moving from a horizontal biting mandibles to a oblique mandible may actually be incorrect in that this may be the ground plan, and when certain groups like the Bibionomorphs invaded terrestrial habitats eating hard fungus and wood, they had to change their mouth parts. The mouth parts changed to suit that type of feeding habit. And in fact, in some of the cases, as you see the Psychotidae, you have a number of these characters lost. And this follows introductions into wood feeding, and this has happened actually in the Chironomids too, and where wood feeding has changed the larval mouth parts. So we feel that this could be just a ground plan. These characters could be a ground plan for the Diptera. Okay, now, one of the things is that there was actually a case where larval morphology agreed with the molecular data. And this happened in, this is an expanded portion of the Bibionomorpha, this terrestrial clade of fungus gnats and gall midges and Bibionids, march flies. And what came out in the phylogeny was this traditional mycetophilid genus, Cimmerus, which is actually and it's been placed in its own family by a number of workers, coming out as sister to the Bibionoidea instead of in the Sciuroidea where all these other fungus gnats and Cestomyiids are. However, if you look at some of the characters of the larvae, larvae of this Cimmerus have this eighth abdominal spiracle in line with Bibionids, whereas all the rest of Mycetophilids and Sciuroids lack this eighth abdominal spiracle. They also, if you look at the mouth parts, have these very, what now we don't think are necessarily primitive, but these biting type mouth parts rather than these kind of sawing type mouth parts that are found in most other Sciuroids. So we believe that this is evidence for a relationship, and there was actually good support in the molecular data for this relationship. So here's a case where the molecular data actually agreed with the larval morphology. Lastly, we can infer some of the ecological and evolutionary, the ecological evolution of larval Diptera from this phylogeny. This is a time tree of divergence times that we got from the molecular data using that same tree that I showed in the previous figures. And you can notice that most of the earliest lower Diptera are aquatic or semi-aquatic. And it's not until the Bibionomorpha and the Brachycera that the larvae become more terrestrial. This is probably, and they also feed on, they're mostly sabrophagous, feeding on detritus and microorganisms. And this is another case in which I think the larval mouth parts are reflecting this ecology where they're using these horizontal or oblique mandibles to gather food in this liquid type of environment this kind of mush that's made up of decaying material. And it's not until you get into the terrestrial forms that these mandibles, especially in the Bibionomorpha, are used to feed on solid, more solid materials. So we can infer a number of things from this molecular phylogeny about the ecology and morphology of larval diptera. So there's, I've just discussed the molecular results, but there is more to come from Flytree, morphology and the tier 1 and 2 molecular data sets. Here's just a sampling of some of the morphological characters, and we've got a number of, we're going to be taking a lot of SCM figures and scoring characters across all of Diptera to figure out the phylogeny of the Diptera. So with that, are there any questions? Yes.
To what extent is your the direction of flow of your tree based on your outgroup?
Based on the outgroup?
Yes, yeah, so you have a site in the outgroup of the
outgroup. Okay. No, we've actually added leps and coleopterins and a number of other holometabolins, and it does not affect the polarization of it. It does not affect the sister group of the deuterophobiids with the rest, and it you get the same topology. So they're fairly robust. Any other questions? Yeah. Yes, sir.
So you were talking about agreement in larval morphology.
They're very specialized, yeah.
How do you sort of get around that?
I think the sesamoids are just very specialized for their lifestyle. If you look at the Lestremiine sesamoids, they're a little bit less specialized than these phytophagous ones, but I'm not really an expert on the morphologies of the sesamoids. They seem to be a more specialized group within them. And the relationships between the higher Bibionomorpha and especially the Sciuroids are not, I don't think, are particularly robust with our molecular data, because they are, I think, a recent, fairly recent group compared to most of the other groups of lower Diptera. And so I think with additional gene sampling and more studies, I think we can get a better phylogeny. And multiple people are working on the morphology, morphological phylogenetics of the Sciuroidea and Bibionomorpha. So it may change a little bit where the sesamoids go and such. But the strong support for the Cimmerus being with the Bibionoids is, in all the analyses, is fairly interesting.
So.
What's that?
Aren't some of your older fossils Bibionomorphs?
They are stem group Bibionomorphs. They are not recent families. But whereas other families have the recent families that are much older.